And a one, and a two, and welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 283, a chat with Jeremy Whitley. I am Chris Mosby.
I am Caleb Gerard.
Now don't cut
out. We're missing Murray Fox tonight.
Yes.
Okay, we're missing Murray Fox tonight. Crap, am I cutting out? Okay, well.
No, you're fine now. You just did for a second. Okay.
So as who's it, with us?
Yes, who is with us? As it says, we said in the episode name, we are interviewing Jeremy, or having a chat with. That's actually more accurate because, you know, we're not professional or anything. We're going to chat with Jeremy Whitley, which he had a brand new comic come out today for Marvel Comics, The Unstoppable Wasp. And he is a writer of other things as well. We'll get all into that in a second. So here's Jeremy.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Yeah, nice to have you on. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So I've been get into it a little bit here. I've been looking at reviews of the comic. Now I know I enjoyed reading it, and Caleb, we were talking about it earlier. He enjoyed it. That was correct, right, Caleb? I think fun was the word you used, I believe, which is something you don't see in comics as much as we should. And it seems like pretty much all of the
Jeremy, and I think you're probably
go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say you're kind of following in the footsteps along with Ms. Marvel and Hellcat, and to a certain extent Spider-Woman. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I love comparisons with Ms. Marvel. I think that's a great book. I think in a lot of ways, it's like the books like Ms. Marvel and Squirrel Girl, but also tied a little more tightly into the Marvel universe than I think some of those books are. Just by the fact of Nadia being, you know, Hank's daughter, she has a very kind of solid connection to the Avengers and a lot of those classic Marvel characters.
Is she? So tell me. Let's get this part out of the way kind of early on. So what is the book? Who is she? Why is she?
So Nadia is the daughter of Hank Pym and his first wife, Maria, who, if you could go back and read the old Tales to Astonish back from, you know, Hank's original origin, Maria was kidnapped and kept away from Hank later found to have been killed by the group that kidnapped her. What people did not know at that point, however, was that Maria was pregnant at the time she was kidnapped, and while sort of in captivity gave birth to Nadia, who was raised in the Red Room, which people will be familiar with from Black Widow, where she was raised to be a female assassin. Nadia was brought up in that same place, but because of her aptitude for science, they decided to, transfer her to a smaller part of the program, which dealt with, people who are unusually intelligent, producing, their own brand of super science to, help them assassinate people more good. So that's where she's been up until recently. When she was assigned with duplicating her father's experiments into Pym particles and was successful, and in doing so, used them to shrink herself down and escape and come to find her father in America, only to discover that he had recently died as well. So she's sort of taken up the mantle of the Wasp. She, built herself some wings in her father's lab, which is where she's still sort of operating out of. It's his home lab. And, we sort of pick up with her trying to establish, American citizenship, among other things, in this first chapter.
So you and Mark Waid, you invented the character, but not her mom. Her mom was a pre-existing character from back in the day, just briefly, kind of a throwaway character, yes?
Her mom is part of Hank's origin. I don't believe she ever appears in like current time in that book, but you know, in Hank becoming the becoming Ant-Man, part of his story is that, you know, he had a wife who was taken away from him, and she's named and depicted and all that fun stuff. But you know, Mark came up with the character of Nadia, who, you know, had not been part of the story up till then. But inserts very nicely into the, you know, established lore there.
Interesting.
So 100%. Okay, so Mark Waid comes up with a guy, because I really enjoyed when you all did the two parter in I can't remember which Avengers book it was. I'm so sorry. That's kind of rude of me, but I
know it's in. So Mark did the initial introduction story for her, which takes place in the Free Comic Book Day story from last year, and then in Avengers. She goes on a bit of a road trip with Jarvis and Janet and that. And Mark and I co-wrote one of the issues of All New Avengers, which deals a lot with her origin, her role in, you know, as much as it is in Civil War II, and then it sort of spins into what Unstoppable Wasp will become.
Interesting. Okay.
So will Janet be a recurring character in this book, or is that something you're going to let her fly, so to speak, no pun intended, fly on her own for a while, and then start bringing back in the legacy character? I guess she's a legacy character, but the older characters.
Yeah. So Janet is definitely going to be a recurring character. This first story arc, where I'm trying to concentrate more on Nadia, and you know, she's building her own lab as well here. So we're going to have some new characters introduced, as well as some classic supporting characters and villains. But yeah, Janet's definitely going to be around. So, you know, once the first arc is done, we'll probably see a bit more of her as well.
So she's also in Jersey, though, along with Ms. Marvel. So are you all going to be tied into that at all, or are you going to try and, again, keep it? I mean, I know Ms. Marvel was in the first issue, but is she going to be popping up frequently?
You know, I would love nothing better than for, her to be... for Nadia and Kamala to be friends. Obviously, Kamala's got a lot of her own stuff going on between her book and Hero, and Champions. Right. Now, yeah, Kamala's not going to be like a regular supporting character in the book, but, you know, having some similar interests to Nadia, she is somebody I'd like to see, you know, come in and out occasionally, especially since they were Avengers teammates for a while there, too.
Total aside, but I love how you, and I don't read the Mockingbird book, and probably my bad, but I like that you reminded the readers that she was more than just a couple of nunchuck sticks and married a Hawkeye. I had forgotten that she actually had a brain in there, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, an interesting thing about that character that's, I think, to some extent, his sort of disappeared, especially, you know, with her appearances in, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on TV. She's much more of a, you know, badass who hits things with sticks. Yeah. Whereas, you know, Bobby Morse's origin in the comics, she started out as a scientist who, you know, her first few appearances were doing things like trying to replicate the super soldier serum and, you know, dealing with man thing in the swamp and, you know, things like that. So it's sort of, it's an interesting thing that's kind of disappeared from what most people know about her. And that was something I wanted to bring back up is, you know, that's something that Nadia does know about her, whereas Nadia is not as familiar with the superhero side of things. She does know all about, you know, scientists, super scientists.
Now, how does, and you're probably going to get into this in later issues, but she came out of the Red Room like fairly normal and not psychotic, but Black Widow and a couple of the other Red Room characters we've seen in Black Widow are not. They're pretty nuts and killer, cool about killing. She doesn't seem to be so cool about that. Is that, are you going to address that at all?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely addressed that some. I think part of what appealed to me, you know, even early on reading Mark's stuff with Nadia is that she refuses to let that stuff define her, and she refuses to kind of continue to live in the shadow of that. You know, she's free now, and having already had, you know, 16 years of her life taken away from her, it's she's pretty determined to make the most of what she has now. You know, I think that's part of the thing, is she has every right to be upset, and every right to, you know, not get back up. You know, she saved herself from this terrible lab that she'd lived in since she was born, only to then, you know, get here and find her father was dead. Wow. So, you know, she has every excuse not to be a hero, but you know, she doesn't take it. She is, you know, beyond anything optimistic, which, you know, really appeals to me. You know, being as there's so much of history of, you know, sort of grim and gritty superheroes who've been through a lot less than she has.
Yeah,
no kidding.
That was what I really liked about the issue was that positivity. I don't see that much these days, and I really liked that about it. It was very, I guess the word uplifting is what comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely what I want her to be, is uplifting and optimistic, and you know, at the same time that it's kind of, I feel like a lot of people have said it's a pretty modern thing and relates a lot to, you know, some of the girl superhero books that Marvel's doing now. It also, I think, sort of hails back to the classic tradition of science comics, of, you know, having science adventurers like, you know, the Fantastic Four or Doc Savage or, you know, even Hank himself back in Tales to Astonish days, where, you know, scientists weren't necessarily the, you know, glum guys at a computer who, you know, are predicting the end of the world and just telling us that it's all doomed. You know, she's an adventure scientist, you know, like those older characters.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, I love how you put the Nadia facts in there, and it made me think of flashbacks from the old Flash comics. So,
yeah, you know, I owe a lot of that to Elsa, my artist, because when she initially drew the robots and things like that, she did the little cutaways where you can see, you know, what's underneath, and you know, we had the idea from there of doing the you know, little science facts in there as well. So I think that turned out really great, and it's one of those really cool examples of collaboration that you can only really get in comics.
Yeah.
That's actually what Murray was curious about, is obviously the Marvel style. I don't know if that still exists or not, and is that how you're doing it, is writing the paragraph, she draws it, and you're scripting over it, or is it...
That idea,
are you doing... Okay.
I've never written anything in Marvel style. When I remember talking to Matt Fraction and talking about how he was doing Fantastic Four in Marvel style, and that scares the hell out of me. I can't imagine doing that. So now I write full script, and you know, she has a lot of suggestions, both for things like that and just generally about pacing and those things, and we, you know, talk a lot about that and about character design and those sorts of things as we're you know, going into the issue. And you know, my script, the script we finished with, what's in the book, is definitely quite a bit different than the first one I wrote, but you know, I had a full script with, you know, the same plot and everything there when we started.
So how did you get this gig? I mean, did you lobby for this, or did they say, hey, we've got this book, do you want to do it?
You know, I'd been sort of hassling Tom Brevoort for a while about doing more work with Marvel. Because, I guess it's a year and a half ago now, I did the first thing I'd ever done with Marvel, which was did the Misty Knight and Iron Fist story and Secret War, Secret Love. That was sort of under his office. So I'd worked with him a little bit along with my main editor on that. And then, I did a Civil War story earlier this year, and I did a Year of Marvel story with Kate Bishop, which is, again, under his office, at least to some extent. And I kept sort of nudging him about stuff, and he hinted to me, I guess, back during the summer that, he had something that he thought I'd be good for, and he invited me to kind of pitch my ideas for a series, with Nadia as the main character. It was something that there was, will to do within the company, especially, with there being a Wasp and Ant-Man movie in the works. Her just having been introduced in the Free Comic Book Day story. I pitched this idea, and this was sort of the main, the gist of what I pitched in the first place is more or less what's here. We've sort of sanded off all the rough spots in it, and it's more or less that book I pitched initially. And it's really been sort of it's been a slow process of getting everything to exactly where we want it, and a couple delays here and there. But I've been with it for almost half a year at this point.
Wow. Okay. So, I'm not quite sure how to ask this question, but I'm going to ask it. I'm going to ask it as bluntly as I can. So, you're a dude writing basically, girls' comics. I'm putting it bluntly, and that seems to go against the PC, Facebook, Twitterati need for these books to be written by, a woman. Have you heard anything? Any gotten any flack? Have they said, "Hey, why is a guy writing this?" Or do you get not a pass, but do you get a little bit of flex because of your princeless stuff?
I think it's a combination of a couple of things. I think with princeless, it's my creator-owned thing that I sort of brought from the very beginning, and I think I've learned a lot of things doing that, one of which is that it pays to do research and pay attention to what people are saying, and really take things into consideration that I think some writers don't necessarily. It's a big temptation to have an idea and just make the story you're telling fit that idea. It's been sort of my experience that you make better comics by listening to people who've been through stuff and paying attention to what people are saying. I think to some extent that's what's provided some of the success of Princeless as a book with, a female main character with a diverse cast. I think that's given me some amount of trust from people because of that. And beyond that, I think to some extent we're hitting a point with books where, there are a lot of great books that are being written by, female writers, and, obviously, there can always be a better representation, but I think at this point, it's gotten to where if you have a team of people that's mixed, like myself and Elsa are, where we have at least women as part of the creative process, that it certainly helps to make it a book that is going to appeal to people more. I think the, not having, not having any women writing books about women is really a symptom of a bigger problem.
You're not here to solve it, right? Okay.
Yeah, and I mean...
So, did your daughter... Oh, go
ahead. Yeah, I was going to say, like, sorry. I can't... Yeah, I was going to say with the question of, like, why aren't companies hiring more women to do stuff? Obviously, that's gotten better over the last couple of years. But I think it's largely a question of, you know, why aren't people paying attention to, what female readers want and listening to what they have to say? And I do think, you know, that's something that I've taken into careful consideration. And while, you know, having me on a book doesn't actually solve the problem of needing to hire, yeah, you know, more diverse people, it does certainly, help that it's something that I take into consideration when I'm writing the book.
So what does your daughter think of this book?
My daughter has not read it yet. She's, we're a couple chapters into Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, and she is determined to not read anything but that until we're done with that.
Yeah, that's just like kids.
Good.
Isn't it?
Choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, choice. You know, I brought home a bunch of copies of it the other day when I picked it up at the store, and it's been very, like, she's not at all interested in reading this right now. She's got other things in her mind.
How old is she again?
5.
I got a 6.
5. Okay, yeah, I have a 6-year-old
nephew.
A 9 and a
13. Yeah, I know what that's like. They get it in their head they want to do something. They don't let go. That's for
Yeah,
sure.
they do what they want, or they do nothing half the time.
This is true.
So, kind of on that same vein, I lost my train of thought here. Oh yeah, our house, big fans. My daughters are big fans of the Supergirl TV show. They like having it's a girl being the hero. Is that, do you guys watch the Supergirl TV show in your house?
Oh, absolutely. We love, especially, you know, the second season. We've been watching that quite a bit. My daughter really, really enjoys Supergirl. She's a big fan of the Flash TV show as well.
Yeah, good choices. Does she, has she seen the Harry Potter movies or no?
So we are watching them as we read the books. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we finish the book and then we go get the movie and watch that.
Gives him motivation to finish the book.
Yeah, and it's neat because I didn't really read them as they were coming out either, and I've seen all the movies, so it's nice to actually get to read them now because I get to see what everybody else was talking about, you know, the books being so much better.
I've been meaning to do that for a while.
My daughters are so much better than I am. My daughters are so much better than I. I've only listened to them. The only one I actually read was the first one, and then I got the books on tape for all the other ones. So, schmuck. So, back to your current work. So you're also doing some of the Monsters Unleashed stuff with the big crossover that's coming up.
Yeah, I'm doing the Monsters Unleashed Champions issue, and also the Monsters Unleashed All New X-Men issue.
Young character. I thought the so All New X-Men is getting that. Even I've kind of lost track of what they're doing with X-Men. I didn't thought they were gold or red or something like that now, but okay.
So I think the relaunched X-Men books are coming in March, and the tie-in is in February. So, you know, it'll be relaunched after the Monsters Unleashed event happens.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yep. So this is the current all-new X-Men team.
the young ones with the new Wolverine and Kid Apocalypse and how do you pronounce her name? The idea. I'm gonna screw up her name.
I've always just said Edie.
I don't know if
that's correct. But yeah, that's, you know, those three, and then the rest of the team from the past, with the exception of Jean, and in this case Cyclops, was concurrently appearing in the Champion story I wrote, so I didn't put him in this one as well because it wouldn't make sense. Get be fighting monsters in two different cities.
Is Nadia going to be involved at all in the Champions one, or is she at all in the Monsters Unleashed stuff?
No, I don't think there's, unless, you know, she may be in the Avengers Monsters Unleashed story, because she is currently in Wade's Avengers team, which I unfortunately don't know too much about that. Although having read the first issue of Monsters Unleashed, you know, the primary Avengers team is in the main book, so it might not need to have too much going on other than that.
Okay. So what is next for Nadia after forming Girl?
Well, that's going to be, you know, our next couple issues is going recruiting, as well as running into some bad guys in the process. We're going to have a couple of new villains and a couple of classic ones there.
Who are the classic ones? Who are the classics?
Yeah, I'm getting to bring back a couple of old Avengers villains that I haven't seen in quite a long time.
Ooh, there you go.
And that we'll see later in this story. I'm excited about that because I love nothing better than getting some good old villains. And you know, in the first issue we had, you know, Monica Rappaccini, who's been around, but you know, having some good Girl evil villains in there as well, I think gives a nice rounding out to the comic there. Not all the girls are good.
Who are the villains that you're bringing back?
Oh, I can't tell.
I can't talk about that yet.
Yeah, come on, man. You can't tell that.
Killing.
Okay, well then
let me take a step sideways. Remind me. Go ahead.
So what we'll be doing, I think, is we have said in issue two we're going to have Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur in two and three, and then I believe the end of three and four is where we have the new villain in there. So when that cover comes out, you'll get to see our new design for the new villain, but. That should only be like a month away at this point. So
yeah, I think they're pre-selling those two and three already on Comixology.
Yeah, the cover for four has the villain on the front of it. So keep an eye out for that.
There you go.
Okay. Right. Is Bobby Morse going to stick around in this book now that I guess her solo book has been canceled?
You know, I'd definitely like to have Bobby at least pop in and out. She's not in these first couple issues beyond the first one very much because, you know, we wanted to focus on Nadia and the new folks coming in here. But yeah, we definitely haven't seen the last of Mockingbird in these books.
I was one of my favorite miniseries of all time was the Hawkeye. I know, again, referring with Hawkeye, but it was the Hawkeye miniseries that kind of brought her back to popular recognition. So, and part of it was because of her.
I always liked
her. Of course,
yeah.
You know, of course, West Coast Avengers, and the list goes on.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff. So, tell us a little bit about your Princeless book, and what's that about?
So my
for the people that don't know.
So the main series, which has been going on for the 5 years off and on at this point, is about a princess. Her name is Adrian, who is locked away in a castle by her evil parents with a guardian dragon. And rather than waiting around to have a prince save her, she decides to team up with the guardian dragon and save herself, and goes off on a quest to go save her sisters, who are all similarly locked up.
Huh. I remember when I first heard about that. That's a really good concept and something. We need more characters like that out there. So, and you got nominated for 2 Eisner Awards for that, I see.
Yep, we got nominated for 2 Eisners, one of which I lost to Mark Waid, which is something I reminded him of when we worked together.
Yeah, I imagine.
Yeah, because that was during his now legendary Daredevil run.
Oh, yes, yes. Very, very much love that. That was probably the number 7 one with the blind kids, I bet. That's probably what beat you out.
It was indeed.
Yeah, I thought so. I remember when he won
for that. It was literally like when I got the nomination, it was for best single issue, one.
Yeah.
They told us everybody else who was in the category, and they were like, oh, yeah, there's, Mark Waid and Chris Samnee for Daredevil. There's Lock and Key. There's Unwritten. Oh, and I was like, oh, Jesus, I never won in this.
Of all the times to get nominated, that's pretty stiff competition, for sure.
Yeah, that was a tough one, but it was
Confidential was nominated the same year as Titanic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that people say it's an honor just to be nominated, and it definitely is. But it would have been nice to win too.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, but we we also won a few Glyph Awards that year from the on those same issues. Each volume that we've done is the story of Adrian trying to save one of her sisters. So we've been through 5 volumes so far, and we're coming up on the last couple volumes of this main story. And then we also did a spin-off series called The Pirate Princess, which is sort of a swashbuckling action-adventure revenge story.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like you had an issue come out today, as a matter of fact, as we're recording this. Or am I wrong? Maybe a trade or something. It seems like I saw something for action.
Yeah, the trade has just come out on the most recent volume. That's probably what it is.
Okay. Yeah, I remember seeing it. So, all right. Let's see. And you're still doing stuff for Action Labs too? The director of, I forget now, I had it up just a second ago.
I used to do marketing for Action Lab. I don't really do marketing much anymore. I do some stuff with, programming and outreach for, like kids and, programs related to that. So we worked with a lot of people like Pop Culture Classroom and the Denver Comic Convention and
that's cool.
Several other things like that. We're trying to get books like not just Princeless but also Molly Danger and
that's a good book.
Several of those books that are for all ages, trying to get them out into kids' hands however we can.
Yeah, there you go. That's good. Need to see that more. I know that's how I learned to read, was comics, and it was a lot different back then. So.
Yeah, I mean, I surprised my mother-in-law because, her youngest, she insists, does not read if he can help it. Mm-hmm. And I gave him the first volume of the Miles Morales Spider-Man story. I gave him actually, I think, the first 2 trades, and I got a call from his mom that night asking where she could get more because he had read both of them already. So.
That's good. I love hearing that.
The library.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I was actually, yeah, my local library has some comics there. That was surprising. Let's see. Some questions.
So go ahead. So Chris mentioned that he learned how to read on comics. So what were your first comics? What did you grow up on?
I think like a lot of people, my first comics were my dad's comics. So, you know, my dad read a lot of X-Men and Spider-Man. Obviously I was growing up during the X-Men cartoon series of the 90s. So yeah, X-Men was my jam for a lot of stuff. It was actually really cool, even, you know, with the all new X-Men not exactly being that same team that I grew up on, but actually getting to write X-Men at all is a pretty neat thing, considering, you know, X-Men have been with me since I was like 3 or 4 years old.
That they don't just give those out to anybody. That must be a good feeling.
Yeah, no, it was really nice because yeah, that story was, they came to me and they were like, oh yeah, we want something that's, you know, mostly focusing on Laura, on Wolverine, you know, and we have the other characters as sort of a B story in it. And I was like, okay, you know, I have an idea for somebody I want to play off of of Laura in this. And they're like, okay, who do you want to do? And I was like, I want Gambit. And they were like, okay, yeah, sure, you can use Gambit. It's like, that's amazing.
Oh, that's good. That's cool.
Yeah, I got to write Gambit and actually write him with a Southern accent as compared to whatever it is that Chris Claremont writes him with.
Yeah, those days, I remember.
Yeah.
Now, hold on here. Let's see. Looks like Caleb dropped off. I'm trying to get him back on, but we can continue to talk. One thing. Whoa, okay. Is that Caleb?
Sorry about that. I blame my cat.
You all right?
Yeah, I blame my cat.
Oh, okay. Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask is a little bit is I've dabbled in writing a little bit. I took a comic book writing class years ago. But a little bit about your actual writing process. And I've asked this, the writers that we've had on before, I usually ask this question. And I've depended on... What are you doing, Caleb? You all right?
Nothing. I'm here.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, sorry about that. The one thing I've always struggled with, and I mean, because, well, the book that I worked on was like a technical book, and I've been trying to do fiction off and on for years, but I guess the question I always ask is, if you believe, I mean, I'll just say it this way. Okay. Writer's block. How do you handle that? And now, before you answer, I know some people I've asked that they don't believe in writer's block. That they just write whatever. But what's your take on writer's block and how do you usually handle it?
I mean, I've got a couple of different things that I'll do. You know, if I'm having trouble with a particular idea occasionally, I'll go for a run or take a shower or something that'll help take my mind off of it. And, you know, usually that's when I come up with my best ideas. Something that's really affected me and sort of bored its way into my mind was I was listening to an interview with Matt Fraction where somebody asked him about writer's block. And he was like, look, I mean, writer's block is a luxury for people who write, you know, casually. If you write for a living, writer's block means you're not eating.
and
I have kids
point.
And I can't afford for them to not eat.
That is a good point.
Wow.
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I, you know, it's just sort of stuck there in my mind ever since I heard him say it. And it's mm-hmm. just, you know, I sort of remind myself that, you know, if I want to keep, you know, writing as a profession, then I just don't have the luxury of doing that, no. of getting stuck.
I've never heard it put that way, but that's a very good way to think about it. Very good way to think about it.
So Chris, what you need to do is quit your job. And,
oh yeah. And, yeah, I don't think
and
so.
Then, and then you, you The gun is to your head.
No, I got 5 miles of feet. I can't do that. I really can't complain. I've got, as you well know, Caleb, I've got it real easy. I work from home. So, you know, I'm sitting here with a bunch of computers and everything else, and that's the computer thing's what I do. So I really can't complain. It's just the writing thing. I have little spurts where I do good for a while, and then it's years and I can't do anything, and it's been that way for 4 or 5 years now. So I don't know. I just always ask that question. So
I've definitely had times where, you know, I have trouble getting it going, and sometimes it's just a question of once you're doing so many things at any given time, if you have an issue with, you know, one particular project, you can jump to something else.
And, yeah.
I mean, you know, in my case, I've always got another pitch or another interview that I need to answer or something like that. So, you know, no matter how much stuff I'm having trouble with, there's always at least a couple of things that I should be jumping on somewhere.
Yeah, I know what that's like. Yeah.
So, I had to delete that Facebook app, Chris.
Yeah, right. Oh, hey, I don't barely touch that anymore. I'm busy. So, okay, here's this might be a funny question, but what's it like to work with Mark Waid? And we'll preface that with anybody that's listened to this podcast long enough, I'm a big Waid fan. So that might, I don't know, it might be a silly question, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing because, you know, Mark's somebody who's been around literally every aspect of comics at some point.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You know, he's not just written, but he's also edited and been in and out of, you know, every major company at some point. So he has a very different perspective about comics than I do. Mm-hmm. I think it's really informative, but also, you know, it was really great working with him because, you know, part of why I got in there in the first place was that, you know, he had a lot on his plate, and with it being something that, you know, concerned a character that I was already writing in my book, he was very, you know, we sat down and sort of planned out what we wanted to do with it, and then he was like, all right, go to it, and, you know, didn't really, wasn't territorial about his book, and didn't, you know, feel that need that, you know, you occasionally feel from people to make changes to things that are perfectly fine already just so that they can say they did.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'd like to get him on here one of these days, but you never know. We're too small.
He's just hard to pin down because he's doing, you know, 10 books at any given time.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. So
we're not quite Newsarama here, Chris.
No, I know. It's a pie in the sky thing. I mean, we did get John Ostrander, but that was cool. But anyway, that was a while back. Let's see.
As we asked. So what do you read nowadays? I mean, obviously you're reading Harry Potter, but what else are you reading?
So usually I have a small pile of books that are, you know, books I'm reading with my daughter. Which is usually Squirrel Girl and Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur and Lumberjanes. In addition to that, I've got, you know, my stuff that she can't read, which at this point is everything from Clean Room and Bitch Planet and I'm also enjoying the. I had to start reading All New Wolverine to get caught up so I could do the All New X-Men story. And as soon as I started reading it, I was like, wow, why was I not reading this book? Because Tom Taylor's doing an amazing job on that.
Yeah.
I also, of course, like everybody, read Saga. Chew just finished up in this last month, and that was one that I've been with that book since the beginning.
Yeah. I've read one volume of that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm not hearing any DC in there. No, I was just gonna say I'm not hearing any DC in there. It's all Marvel and a couple of indies. Is that just not a DC guy? I mean, I'm not picking. I'm just kind of curious.
No, I mean, traditionally, I haven't read a ton of DC books. I was actually reading quite a few for a while during the DC YOU DCU. They canceled most of the books I was reading, so I just suddenly didn't have any DC books on my pull list.
That's exactly what happens to me with Marvel. It seems like every time I get into a book, they cancel it. And we're kind of DC fanboys in this podcast, but we try to cover Marvel whenever something comes up. We've been going through the Inhumans versus X-Men stuff, and I'm really intrigued with how they're going to restart those titles. And I kind of miss reading X-Men. I used to read it all the time, but I haven't read it in years. We covered the Avengers versus X-Men event on here. And I'm sure you haven't listened, but we actually go through the issues and read them and, you know, explain or summarize or whatever. That's kind of what we do a lot. Sometimes we use voices if we've had enough to drink, which isn't very often, but you know,
because we're usually recording in the morning.
Yeah, so. It's usually in the morning, so there's not that much drinking involved there. But so yeah, that's kind of why we asked. I've trying to read more. I'll tell you what I love that Marvel's doing, and I've ranted about this on this podcast before, those essentials, the essential epic collection. That's what I meant. I don't know. Have you seen those? Those are awesome.
Not sure.
Yeah. What they do is they take a chunk and they're huge books and you can get them, you know, pretty reasonably around $25, but there's like 300-400 pages and they put them out in random order and you'll like get from 1966 to 72 or whatever, and they'll put a number on it and it'll be Amazing Spider-Man number 21, I think, or whatever it was, essential collection. It had the whole cosmic thing when he had the Captain Universe powers. I think that was the first one I bought, and they've been doing it. They do it for just about anything now. I got a Doctor Strange one the other day. I've got a whole bunch of them, but they've put out some of the number ones, but one of my favorite characters is Iron Fist, and they put out, I forget the name of it, but it was all of his first appearances in a pretty big book. And they've put out two volumes of Power Man and Iron Fist, which is something I never did get to read for whatever reason when they first came out. So I started reading those a while back. I've been catching up on Marvel. For whatever reason, I never was that much into Marvel except for X-Men and maybe Spider-Man when I was a kid, but I've been yanking those things up, and it's a great way to catch up on things.
Yeah, are you reading the current Power Man and Iron Fist with David Walker and Sanford Green?
No, I've looked at it, but I haven't gotten into it yet. I've heard it's really good.
It's really good. I really enjoyed.
I love that book. That book is so much fun.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to read that too.
Yeah, it was one of those things that, like, I was a big fan of Brubaker and Fraction and Aja's yes. Immortal Iron Fist.
Yes.
And then
I've got every
he kind of dropped off for a while.
Yeah.
I'd been hoping for a new book with him, and hoping for something with Cage, and I know both Sanford and David Walker, and when that got announced, I was like, all right, well, if I'm not going to write a book about Iron Fist, then I'm glad they're the ones doing it.
Yeah, they're actually, I just saw it in solicits today, there's a new Iron Fist book coming out. It's supposed to take place right after the last run that Marvel did, which I started, but I don't think I ever finished. I forget the name.
Yeah,
who was doing that? But
the Living Weapon.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah,
Kari Evans, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, they're starting a new series here in a couple of months.
My favorite part of the Power Man Iron Fist stuff is the non-swearing Luke Cage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like
Wearing his little
the Power
rhymes
Man
and
Iron Fist stuff so much more than the Living Weapon stuff is very serious.
Oh
And
yeah, it was way
I like
serious.
the comical elements of Power Man and Iron Fist, and you know, I'm always one of those people that I think, you know, you can do a good dramatic story without it having to necessarily be, you know, just grim the whole time. I think a lot of cases, you know, when you have stories with comedic elements, it, you know, gets people to invest in those characters more.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, that's what was really great about like the Giffen Demetis Justice Leagues is, yeah, they were funny, but they had a, you know, they were out doing world saving stuff at the same time.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that DNA in, I mean, pretty much every superhero book that Fraction wrote when he was at Marvel. Mm-hmm. You know, because both Hawkeye and Immortal Iron Fist have sort of this like feeling of this extremely competent superhero who's just shit at life. Like, just can't get his life together. But you know, when it comes to, you know, when it's time for Iron Fist to punch a train, he's on top of it.
Yep. That's what I liked about that run. Yeah.
That was, and you're right with Hawkeye. Hawkeye was a good guy who just didn't know how to be very good socially with pretty much anybody.
Yeah, that was great. I liked that run so much. I got the omnibus they put out.
Yeah, I feel like both of those. There's at least one point per issue where, you know, the main character says something to somebody else and then immediately just goes, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. That I did like. And yeah, that was that one, the Living Weapon one.
See, that's what I've been enjoying about the current run on.
No, that's fine.
I was going to say Deadpool does that recently. Yeah. No, I was going to say Deadpool is doing that recently too, where I think he's more aware that, damn, I shouldn't be saying this stuff, but you know what? I'm going to say it anyhow.
Yeah,
I'm an Avenger now, damn it.
Yeah, I'm still surprised about that.
That's fun
so
stuff.
Let's see, what else did we? I had one. So okay, yeah. Tell a little bit about your creative process. How do you? Where do the stories come from? Do they just pop in your head, or? Do you, I don't know, come up, have an idea, and then and you kind of follow it, or I don't know. That's kind of. Go ahead.
I think I tend to have a lot of sort of fractions of ideas that, you know, in a lot of cases I don't really know what to do with at the time I get them. Mm-hmm. But you know, slowly but surely I tend to. Build stories out and, you know, find places where the ideas fit together. In a lot of cases, like the pitching of something is the hardest part for me.
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah.
I'm good at coming up with ideas and then writing stories. I'm not so good at convincing people of that medium, that middle step where like, here is an idea for a story. You should pay me money to write it.
Yeah.
You know, if I can skip that step and just go, here's a script, check it out, then, you know, I'm generally better off. But unfortunately, a lot of companies want you to actually draw a map before they pay you money to take them somewhere.
Yeah, what is with that anyway, man?
I don't know, man. Seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah, it is. It is. I have that problem with what I do, too. It's like, well, we need to upgrade this stuff and... You just need to do it. Just, you know. Don't ask me why.
Well, it's funny you should mention. If you read, there's an interview with Paul Levitz right now on Newsarama where he's talking about how he's been coming up through DC, and that was what happened to him. He was like, he was basically standing around one day, and they said, "You want to write this book?" And he said, "Okay, sure." He even have a pitch for Legion. He just jumped in and did it.
That's the funny thing is I was on a panel with Paul Levitz at one point and Ron Mars, and like both of them, it was a thing about breaking into comics, and they were asking like how they got into comics, and literally like Paul Levitz, it was like, so, you know, he was reading comics and somebody approached him and was like, hey, he was working like printers or copiers or something in the building at that point. And they were like, hey, you read this stuff, don't you? You want to write an issue of this? And so like he started writing it. And like Ron Mars, it was the same thing. Like he was, you know, doing something else for the company and somebody was like, hey, we need somebody to write this issue of this thing. Can you write this?
Oh, man.
It's like, I remember sitting at this and being like, so wait, I'm the only one who got into this intentionally? You guys just kind of stumbled into it?
Oh, man, that's funny.
Ass back. Well, that's the Peter David story, too, is he was in the mailroom when he started doing Hulk. It's like, that's not cool. Yeah, I mean, Jeremy, you literally worked your way up, I mean, through the ranks. You did the self-publishing thing. You wrote the fill-ins, and now you're getting an opportunity to write the monthly, but it wasn't, you know, it was getting your stripes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The hell with them. No, I'm kidding.
Well, that seems like it's been that way for a couple of years now, how to get into comics is actually publish your own. I know there's been some that aren't that way, but it seems like in the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 years or so, that's usually the way to do it. Write something and it gets popular, and then next thing you know, you make it, you know, at least that's what it seems like to me anyway.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I've heard a lot of people say that at this point, really, like, your self-published comics kind of have to be your business card to present to people, and you know, it can be a pretty effective business card if you do a good job and you make a good comic. But yeah, it's I don't know. I guess it's one of those, you know, dress for the job you want kind of things,
yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
You gotta pretty much be doing the job before they'll hire you to do the job.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, I think
I got nothing. I am.
You, I was just about
I'm
to
looking
say.
Forward to your run on Wall.
Yeah,
go ahead, Chris.
No. Go ahead. I was just gonna say I've run out of things. So, if you had anything else, then ask it.
No, I mean I could talk for a long time with you, Jeremy. But I know that A, it's late. B, you have money to make. So I'm not gonna drag you down into my mire of fanboy talk, which I could easily do.
I'll ask Jeremy this though: is there anything he wants to say to the 5 or 6 people that actually listen to this podcast?
Oh, please, this is 10. Come on.
All right, maybe 10. Okay, fine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I'm pretty sure if 10 people will go out and buy the comic, then you know they'll let us keep making it. I'm pretty sure 10 is the cutoff, right?
10 is the cutoff. Okay. Well,
okay.
I'll make sure that I all the social media I can, the interview, and you know, I've already, as you've probably seen on Twitter, because you retweeted one of them. I've been tweeting reviews of it as we've been talking, because I really enjoyed it. So it is a good book. I think you did a great job on it. So, not what
it's
I expected.
It's one I can share with both my girls. So I appreciate that.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, there's not enough of that out there. That's for sure. Because I know I've got all these comics sitting around, and you know, my nephews, they say, you know, they look at them and it's like, I'm like, well, no, you probably shouldn't read that one either. And we need more stuff like that. So that's good. That's a good deal. Well, okay. So I guess we covered everything today. And if we don't have anything else, I'll close us up. So here's the spiel. As
Jeremy,
always,
thank you.
Yes, Jeremy, thank you so much for coming. We appreciate it. Taking time out of your busy schedule and talking to us. It has been a pleasure.
I'm glad to do it. I'll come back anytime you want me. So.
Oh, okay. Well,
thanks.
All right. That's glad to hear that. Yeah, there you go. When it's X-Men time, we'll come talk to you again. No, I'm just kidding.
All right.
Anyway, okay, here we go. As always, you can send us an email at podcast@tellsfromalarmbox.com and let us know what you think there, or you can join us on our Facebook page and join the conversation. And as also, you can comment on the actual episodes and let us know what you think there. And that is all we have for this week. And we are out.